Some people here are planning on becoming ordained with the Bodhisattva vows in May-June time at the Sheringham Sesshin. And so normally we do kind of, well, we've learned in different ways over the years, but it used to be that it's a week-long session and we would have sessions for the ordainees to receive teaching on the principles, and then we move to doing it in advance, and this time we're going to do it in advance but open, not all of it, so the people who are being ordained will also have sessions where they can ask questions, etc., privately, but we're doing the talks at least will be more open, and so people, anyone is welcome to hear them, and so today is the first. Just to say, purely from a practical point of view, if you are interested in becoming ordained, then it happens once a year at our spring session, which is normally in Crosley, not necessarily always, which is near Liverpool, at the end of May, beginning of June. And it's run by different teachers, Godos, each year, and so it's possible to be ordained. So the Bodhisattva ordination isn't necessarily a link to a particular teacher. You can be ordained by any teacher. It's when you ordain as a monk or nun that's more of a connection directly than an individual teacher. And so you can receive the Bodhisattva ordination from any teacher. And as I say, Jean-Pierre and Guy have ordained at the Sheringham Sesshin, and we've also had ordinations from Maggie in the past, and very likely in the future as well. If you are interested in becoming ordained from a purely practical point of view, first thing is to have a speak with Adrian and I about it. You do need a rakasu, the small kefa that people wear, and normally people sew it themselves, but not always. And if you want to sew it yourself, then you need to do it well in advance of the ordination. And even if you don't sew it yourself, we need to know well in advance to make sure one is ready for you. And the other thing you have to do is you have to officially ask, you write a letter to the person who's going to ordain you, speaking about your connection with them and why you want to be ordained. It doesn't have to be kind of complicated, it can be quite simple, but it's good. And it doesn't have to be long, it can be quite short, but it should come from the heart. So that's kind of the practical side, just so people know. So now what I want to do today is look at the first aspect, I suppose, the fundamental aspect of what it means to be a Bodhisattva, by looking at the four Bodhisattva vows that we've just chanted. And one of the key ideas, or key practices, almost, one could say, with regard to being a Bodhisattva, is to quote Buddhist Sawaki, rather than to be pushed around in the river of life by one's karma, to plunge in with the strength of the vows. And so it means engaging with life wholeheartedly, and not simply being a puppet to one's upbringing, one's background, one's opinions, etc. It doesn't mean rejecting those, but it just means going beyond those and engaging with something that is beyond this personal self and expressing that in the world. And the vows are an expression of both the personal and the universal, the connection of the personal with the universal. And so I want to speak about what the four vows are, which is what we'll look at today. Then, because the four vows, the ceremony is called the Jukai ceremony, which is the ceremony of the precepts, because one takes precepts, makes commitments as part of this, and at later sessions we'll speak about what those precepts are and what they mean. They look like rules. In some ways they are rules, but in some ways they are not rules. But we will speak about what those are. And over the next few weeks and months, we'll be looking at the different aspects, the things that are chanted in the ceremony of the precept ceremony, the Bodhisattva ordination ceremony. And the different things that are chanted represent different aspects of the practice of a Bodhisattva. And so we'll look at the different aspects of the Bodhisattva aspects of the practice of a Bodhisattva through the chants that are used in the ceremony. Because they both are an expression in that moment of commitment, but also they carry a message as to what is important when one is a Bodhisattva. So first of all, in some ways the most fundamental one is the four vows, because that is the core of the commitment of being a Bodhisattva. And at the height of that is fundamentally a commitment to practice for the benefit of all beings. And that's the first aspect of the vow. So I'll read the four that we take. The first is, beings are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable, I vow to realize it. And so one of the really important things about these, you'll see, it talks about something that is in some way infinite. So it's an expression of the absolute. And then it says, from the finite, I engage with it. I vow to engage with it. And so it's at a fundamental level, it's something that at a personal level, one is vowing to do something that is impossible. In each of these, it's allowing to do something that is infinite, that is universal. And the individual personal self is unable. And so the vow comes from beyond the personal self. The vow comes from the universal self, which is expressed through the personal self. So it's a vow which is basically saying, I express the universal through me, and I express the energy of the universal in the direction of these. The direction of travel of these vows. And so that's kind of the core message of it. And one of the parts of that is that it's not only about personal. The personal is plunging into life wholeheartedly through the spirit of these vows. But it's not only about the personal, it's about one's connection with a broader community, the Sangha, and a whole of humanity, the whole of being, the whole of existence, all beings. All of this is an aspect of it. So it's an aspect of, even though it's putting a language of the personal, it's all about connection with beyond the individual, to the community, to humanity, to all beings, to the whole universe. And so it's an expression of that. And so in some ways one vows to do the impossible exactly because one vows to go beyond the personal. So it's not about my ego saying, my ego will do this heroically as an individual. It's saying, I let go of my ego to allow the energies of life to express through me, to shape the world, along with all my friends in the Dharma, but also all beings who are following this path, whether they know it or not. So that's kind of the the essence of it. It's throwing oneself beyond oneself into life. So looking at each of the four, beings are numberless, I vow to freedom, which is, in the end, vowing to walk together with all beings, wherever they may be, or in the given situation. So if we look at it from the big picture, it's walk together with all beings, wherever they may be, in the direction of liberation. Liberation from suffering, liberation from the ego games that each one of us plays, liberation from the need to prove, liberation from the sense of the everyday self. And so it's vowing, going beyond the purpose, effectively it's saying, turning towards the universal, committing to help all beings to turn towards the universal. And at times that might be through, so there's many ways, I won't talk about how it can manifest, but yeah, what I would say is that the way it manifests in one's life is a consequence of one's own personality, one's karma, etc. But nonetheless, the spirit is beyond the personal. The spirit is a manifestation of the universal. So, beings numberless, I vow to freedom. It's also saying we walk together. It's also saying we walk together this path. In each moment, I vow to engage with the people around me, the beings around me, in a way that's appropriate, but nonetheless recognize that we walk together. That I am both in this moment, what I do is profoundly important, but in other ways, I am just a drop in the ocean. So Okamura speaks about how the vows are in some ways committing to empty the ocean with a teaspoon, is the metaphor he uses. And he says the idea of this is that both we should realise that we're not so great, no matter how much of the ocean that we empty with our teaspoon, we're not so great, and we're not alone. Others need their teaspoons too. But also that to forgive ourselves for not, so neither feel too wonderful about how well you're doing, nor feel too inadequate about how poorly you're doing, because you are just simply a small being in a mighty universe, and you are a small manifestation of the universal. And so neither feel too good nor feel too bad about that. Don't let your ego get caught up in this game, just do it, effectively, that's what they say. So beings are numberless, about freedom. And we'll talk more about kind of through the precepts and the great vows as well, which we'll look more about in some ways what that means. But fundamentally it's about walking the path together with others. And when you're in front of, when you're in a situation, not just putting your own personal ego at the front, it's about what is appropriate in this moment for those who are around me, including myself, but for those who are around me. So that's the first. The second is, delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. So delusions, it's translated into delusions, it's not actually completely delusions, it's vano, which comes from the Sanskrit klesha, which are kind of representations of fundamental drives within us, which they kind of push us in life to, in ways that are appropriate from an individual sense. They push us to want things, to not want other things, to try to avoid suffering, to chase after things that make us feel good, to be careful and avoid doing things that are going to kind of get us killed or badly hurt, eating, you know, all these are kind of part of the drives. But the fundamental thing is that they're drives that the universe has manifested within us to make this personal self look after itself. But they also enclose us and stop us seeing beyond us. There's a risk that these drives, which protect this personal self, stop the personal self opening beyond itself. And so these drives need to be let go of. They need to be seen and abandoned. But nonetheless, recognising if we are human, they will always be with us. I think this is an important part of the Zen teaching, which is different from maybe some other schools of Buddhism. That if you're human, these things are always with us. The practice is not to get rid of them forever and think you're sorted. The practice is to see them as they grow and as they shrink and as they grow and as they shrink, and observe them, how they manifest in your life, and observe and by observing, step beyond them. And so it's not to deny them, but rather it's to step beyond them, to see beyond them. Yeah. So that's the delusions, the bono, the fissure. So even though they are always with us, I vow to end them. But for us, because I personally can't end them, I vow to in some way pass through them, see beyond them. And then the third one, Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. So here, Dharma plural, Dharma gates. The Dharma gates are the myriad Dharmas is the nature of existence. So this is when, if you read a Buddhist text, they use the word Dharma in different ways. There are some relationships, but myriad Dharmas means the many, many ways in which, in which existence manifests. And so, each moment is a Dharma gate, which is why they are boundless, they are infinite, because each moment is a Dharma gate. Each moment is the coming together of the causes and conditions around us. Each moment is a doorway through which we pass. And so, it's vowing to vow to enter them, to pass through each Dharma gate, is effectively to vow to be wholeheartedly engaged with life in each moment through the spirit of the Bodhisattva. So saying, effectively vowing to be undistracted, vowing to be wholehearted, vowing to be moved forward in a committed way in each moment. So Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them, I vow to pass through them, I vow to take the next step in wholeheartedly being with whatever is the situation in this moment, for better, for worse, for pain, for pleasant, for stress, for relaxation, whatever it is, facing it, not turning away, stepping beyond, doing what's appropriate in that moment. Yeah. And what's appropriate, going back to the previous ones, arises when one lets go of one's delusions, sees them and lets go of the stories, when one is open not only to what the ego thinks it wants, but to the unvoiced call of all beings to go beyond the suffering that they experience. So all of these are manifesting, and so that is what is to pass through each Dharma gate. And then the final thing is, the Buddha way is unsurpassable, I vow to realize it. So, in some ways, but it's interesting that they use the way of praise Buddha way. I suspect that's probably a kind of Zen translation in some ways, because it's effectively saying we follow the path of the Buddha, as opposed to we hear and listen to and put into practice the teachings of the Buddha. So it's we follow the path of the Buddha, we take the steps, we follow the steps of the Buddha, and part of that is understanding the teachings and putting them into practice. But from a Zen point of view, it's far more than that. It's exactly to do what I've already said about. It's exactly to let go of whatever mental concepts one has and wholeheartedly engage, wholeheartedly take the next step. And so to realize the Buddha way is simply to take step after step after step, letting go of our illusions, engaging with life as it is, and engaging with life that is letting go of our ego to do what is appropriate for all, not just this individual self, but to do what's appropriate for all in the situation one finds oneself in. And to do what's appropriate for all is not to think very hard, though thinking is certainly something worth doing sometimes. We often do stupid things because we don't think. But it's not fundamentally about thinking, it's more about a deep connection, and allowing thought to be part of that deep connection. And then stepping forward. So beings are numberless, I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless, I vow to enter them. The Buddha way is unsurpassable, I vow to realize it. I vow to tread each step on the way, one step at a time. So I'll finish there and I'll open it if anyone's got any questions.